A swiftly moving aerial view of the bridges of New York by day and the neon-lit skyscrapers of Manhattan in the distance at night. Tiny shimmering lights converge, spelling the word Miramax in bold white block letters. As the background darkens, the logo reads, Miramax Films. Rapidly moving gold rings settle into an interlocking disc, the logo of Radar Pictures. Miramax Films presents in association with Radar Pictures. Frank Good, a grey-haired man in his 60s, in a checked shirt and pale colour chinos, is vacuuming his living room with an old-fashioned upright cleaner. Two wall shelves are packed with framed family photos.
Catch a falling star and put it in your pocket, never let it fade away. Catch a falling star and put it in your pocket, save it for a rainy day.
A garden statuette of a smiling naked cherub pees into a fountain. A Hollywood Gang production, a film by Kirk Jones. Frank pushes an old-fashioned motor-mower across his back lawn. Robert De Niro in Everybody's Fine, with Drew Barrymore, Kate Beckinsale, and Sam Rockwell. Frank climbs a stepladder and prunes some tree branches budding with leaf that are overhanging his garden fence. He weed sprays a footpath and waters two hanging baskets outside his neatly painted garage door.
Some starless night, and just in case you feel you want to hold her, you'll have a pocket full of starlight. Pocket
full of starlight. From his spacious, fully equipped shed, he brings out a garden table. He carries out a chair and wheels out a barbecue.
Catch a falling star and put it in your pocket, save it for a rainy day.
From his cellar, he tosses out a small blue paddling pool, which he inflates using a foot pump.
For when your troubles start multiplying, and they just might.
He throws the garden hose into the pool. Next to the house, birds pick at their feeder.
Just a pocket full of starlight, catch a falling star.
He snatches some sunshine lying on his recliner.
Save it for a rainy day.
The pool, which has a dolphin design, begins to fill with water. Indoors, everything is spick and span.
Save it for a rainy day.
Frank pushes a supermarket trolley between two fully stacked aisles.
You keeping busy?
Yeah, I've been busy, you know.
Busy doing what?
Busy in the garden.
In the garden. You know what? You're missing work. That's what I can see.
No,
that.
I'm not missing work.
Yeah, you're missing the buzz and the jokes and the guys. I know that. Don't tell me that's not true.
Maybe a little. Maybe
yeah,
a little.
Well, are you going to buy some meat or what?
Yeah, I'm going to buy some meat. I'm looking at some meat right now. I want to get some real good steak.
I got a special here on the rump.
Forget the specials. I got the children visiting me this weekend from all over the country. Got them all around the same table, all four of them.
He studies a label on a wine bottle. Whipping off his specs, he turns to a burly store assistant.
Do you know about these wines?
The wine? These ones?
Yeah.
Well, I stocked the section. Why, is there a problem?
No, I just want to get some expensive bottles of wine for my children.
This isn't for children.
I know it's not for children. It's for my children that aren't children anymore. What would be the best ones of this?
Well, we got wines from all over the world. We got English wines, you know, from France. We got Italian wines from all over Europe.
I want to make a good impression on my kids.
You will. Yeah, definitely.
It's got a built-in tenderizing gauge for steaks and poultry with 7 different grades. And there's an automatic spritz to calm flames if the oil catches. Mm. It is guaranteed for 5 years with a premium protective seal. It has an automatic rotisserie. And when the lid is closed, the oxygen is reduced to a level that does not support or encourage the fats to ignite. Mm. Yeah.
Is that what it's going for?
$648, that's the sale price. That's a heck of a deal for this model. It's as low as I can go.
How about $6?
Done. Sure. Absolutely.
The salesman carries the portable barbecue into Frank's house.
Somebody's having a party.
It's just family.
At night, in the light of an external sensor positioned on the roof of his garage, Frank studies the instructions. The light goes out. He walks across to the garage and waves his arms to make it come back on again. He goes inside.
Hello? Robert?
He switches on a light illuminating a photo of boyish-looking, brown-haired Robert.
Oh, well, that's a shame. That's a real shame. Yeah, you're gonna miss out on having some fancy wine and filet mignon steak and, yeah, so far all of them are coming. Some Friday night, some Saturday morning. Yeah, I'm sorry too, but you gotta get back to that orchestra, son. Okay, you take care too. Okay, okay.
Frank's hooded eyes flicker towards a photo of his son when he was little, a violin tucked under his chin, poised in front of a music stand. Frank's lips tighten in disappointment. He switches on an old-fashioned answering machine.
Dad, hi. I can't stop right now. I'm back on stage in a few minutes. The producers are flying in from Paris and want to see the original cast, so I just can't get away this weekend. I'm sorry, I know I haven't been home since the funeral, but I'm trying, I promise. I love you, I'm thinking of you. Big kiss. Hey, Dad, it's Amy. I'm really sorry to have to do this, but things have just gotten really crazy at the agency, and Jack's sick with a fever. He missed school today. So between one thing and another, we're not going to be able to make it this weekend. I'm really sorry, Dad.
Frank grills himself a steak.
And to make things worse, I spoke to David today, and he can't make it either. He's got a lot going on, a painting or something. But anyway, I promise we'll make it to you soon, okay? Love you.
Having washed up his plate, changed into his pajamas, brushed his teeth, he takes a sip of water and leaves the bathroom, turning out the light. The next day, at his doctor's.
Well, you can't. You can't just go flying all across the country now that you're conditioned.
Who said anything about flying? What about buses? What about trains?
I'm worried about your lungs, Frank.
Don't worry about my lungs. Worry about your lungs. My lungs are fine.
Fibrosis of the lungs requires you to take things easy. Now, you know that.
I'm just going on the buses, on the trains.
You picked the wrong job, Frank. Breathing in humidified PVC all those years.
You know, it's just about seeing the family, you know. Gene always kept in touch with everybody, and now it's down to me.
How are you managing on your own?
I'm fine.
You fine?
Fine, yeah, I'm fine.
Fine. You know, when I lost my wife, I found myself talking to her like she was still there. Went on for months. Where the hell are my shorts?
Frank looks round.
No, there's nobody there. I'm talking to myself. Crazy, huh? You do that, Frank?
No.
Not
yet.
I hear what you're saying, I do, but this trip, it's not what you need right now. You gotta take things easy. Do. Stay home. You know what you should do? Spend more time in the garden.
Frank stares blankly at his doctor. He tosses a suitcase down from his attic.
Ed said it was fine. He said just take enough medication. Stick the trains and buses. And I'll take plenty of pictures and I'll bring home the news. I'll start with David in New York. And if anything goes wrong, I'll be right home.
He pats his packed case, addressing his comments at the bed.
My keys. My wallet. My keys. My medication. Camera.
He goes out through the back door, leaving the photograph of his smiling wife, Jean, on the bedside table. Double locking the door, he picks up his case and heads for the railway station.
Meg.
New York City, one way, please.
$87.
$87 is $100. I want to see my son.
Very good.
Know what he does?
Absolutely no idea.
He's an artist.
$87, thank you. Next.
Thank you.
The blue and silver interstate train crosses a steel bridge. Frank sits by a window in a sparsely occupied compartment, looking out at other railway lines passing alongside. Sitting diagonally opposite a well-built girl with mousy hair, he smiles to himself and leans towards her.
What do you think of my work?
The girl's eyes bulge slightly.
You've been looking at it ever since we left the station.
I'm sorry, I don't understand.
No, don't look at me. Look back out the window. Tell me what you see.
Cars.
No.
Trees?
Well, yes, but no.
Houses?
Just remember that you've been looking at it ever since we left the station.
Oh, the window, the glass.
No, I mean, not bad, but it's a start.
An elderly lady.
Birds.
No, not birds.
Rocks.
No, rocks. That's ridiculous. Rocks. You're just guessing. I'm going to stick with this lady here. I think she has an idea.
No, honestly, I really have no idea what you...
You know, just look for the rhythm.
The telephone poles.
Close, close.
The wire.
Keep going.
Really, I give up.
No, that's it, the wire, that's good. I mean, I didn't make the wire, I didn't hang the wire, but I coated the wire, I protected it with PVC coating against the rain, the moisture, heat, stuff like that. So what you actually see is not the wire, it's my PVC coating. I ran 1,000 miles of wire a week, nonstop.
Wow.
Uh-huh. Nonstop. You just think for a minute all the conversations that have taken place over that wire. Breaking good news, bad news.
He brings out his wallet.
Oh, show you something.
Sure.
These are my children. Robert the conductor, David the artist, Rosie the dancer, Amy very high up in advertising. A million feet of wire to get them where they are today.
It's a nice picture.
Thank you. A million feet of wire to get them where they are today.
He leans back in his seat. The gray-haired lady from across the aisle.
Rocks.
Yeah, right. That's right. Rocks.
The woman nods happily. Later, Frank's on a station platform.
They were all supposed to visit me. They were going to have a family reunion instead. They all canceled on me on the last minute.
The train glides towards its destination. And Frank disembarks. Later, after dark, the neon lights of New York City twinkle as Frank rides in a yellow cab down a suburban residential street. The cab pulls up outside a detached house with trees flanking the front entrance. Frank presses a door buzzer and waits. He takes off his specs and tries again. Later, he sits on the stoop, nibbling some nuts. Pigeons flutter above his head. A tattooed blonde.
You lock yourself out, honey.
No, I didn't lock myself out. My son lives here. I'm just waiting for him.
You can come away with me if you want. I know a place.
Oh, thank you. That's nice of you.
You sure?
Thank you.
You want to see my leg?
She eases up her skirt.
Want to see mine?
The blonde hooker strolls off. Frank smiles to himself. The night sky begins to lighten. A cab pulls up outside the house where Frank is dozing. Two young guys get out and hurry off down the street. Frank watches them go, a resigned look on his face. He picks up his case and slowly comes down the stairs. He sets off along the deserted pavement. Walking past a row of shop fronts, he turns to look into a window at a large painting of a man with anxious eyes and bared teeth, reminiscent of a late Picasso. The painting is signed in the bottom right-hand corner by David Good. Frank turns to look back down the street towards the house, and in his mind's eye sees a young boy riding towards him on a bike.
What are you going to do when you grow up, huh?
I want to be a painter and do my pictures.
I'm not a painter. Christ, painters paint walls and dogs pee on walls. You're going to be an artist. Artists paint pictures that change people's lives. Well, what are you going to be?
An artist.
That's right, an artist. So you're going to work hard?
Yes, Dad.
You're going to make me proud?
I'm trying, Dad.
The vision disappears. Frank looks back at the distorted, troubled image behind the plate glass window. He walks on. Later, inside a brightly lit diner, he's sitting at the bar next to a well-dressed, white-haired old man who's staring blankly at a TV set in the corner.
It's going to be on top of the coast sometime tomorrow. Right now, Hurricane Alice is packing winds of 165 miles per hour.
We've got a Category 5 hurricane. The pressure, 900...
It's like a bad storm.
Yeah.
A bad storm.
I'm 94 and keep away from the doctors.
Boy.
I have 3 children, 6 grandchildren. They're busy. They're too busy to talk to me. I can make an appointment. They got lost someplace. They don't need anybody. People changed. Life has changed. Today, you shake hands with somebody, you gotta count your fingers to make sure you got 5 fingers back.
The Chrysler Building stands silhouetted against the pale blue dawn sky. Frank is looking at the hundreds of tributes pinned to the wire fence surrounding Ground Zero. Later, he returns to David's house, trying the doorbell. A young woman comes up behind him.
Hi.
Hi.
Can I help you?
Do the bells work?
Yeah.
My son lives in apartment 9. I'm not sure if he's home, but...
All right.
Thank you.
The woman lets him in, and he starts to climb the stairs. He turns away from the door where the shouting is coming from and walks along the landing towards another door. The walls of the apartment seen from inside are grimy.
David.
Frank bends down and unzips the side pocket of his case and brings out one of several letters he's brought with him. He sifts through them until he finds the one addressed to David. He takes out a ballpoint and writes a message on the envelope. He slides the letter under the door onto the bare wooden floor inside. He's written, "I wanted to surprise you, but you were out. Call you later. Love, Dad." A Greyhound bus speeds down a freeway, flanked on both sides by vast, flat cornfields. Frank, on board, glances at a man in army fatigues walking past him towards the back of the bus. In a cafeteria, Frank tucks into a burger and later chats to a black man sitting next to him. He checks into a featureless motel and walks towards his room down a long, anonymous corridor, gripping his suitcase in his left hand. In his room, he sits on his bed and takes his tablets. In a deserted cafeteria, he has his dinner, chortling as he watches a TV in the corner. The sounds of voices are carried across parallel telephone wires slung across a bright sky.
Amy, it's Rosie. Dad's not answering his phone. Well, don't call him, not till we know what's going on with David. Is there any more news? No. I just had that one call from Mexico saying you've been arrested. I keep leaving messages, but no one's calling back. I think we should tell Dad. Not until we know what's going on. Just avoid talking to him for a couple of days till we know the facts, okay? Okay.
Frank arrives at a modernist, white, box-like residence standing at the top of a wooded slope with its own drive leading up to it. A long-haired young teenager comes to the door.
Oh, my God.
Surprise.
Yeah, definitely. Come on in, Griff.
The boy, Jack, hugs his grandpa.
Does Mom know?
No, I hope not. But hey, look at you. I thought you were supposed to be in bed with a fever.
I don't know, am I?
That's what she told me.
Yeah, I think I was.
Oh, it's got a handle.
Well, of course it's got a handle. It's,
I didn't know that.
I mean, it's got wheels.
Yeah, look how big you got.
I know, right?
Gee.
Hey, listen, I'm online. I'll be back in a minute.
All right, you do your thing.
Mom's out back.
Okay, good.
Frank looks around the minimalist, supermodern, glass-plated living room. His daughter Amy's on her mobile, pacing by the pool. Frank looks out of a sliding door, and seeing her, cracks a happy smile. He purses his lips and whistles.
Amy!
For a split second, he sees a small, brown-haired girl.
Dad?
He waves at her. His adult, brunette daughter Amy runs towards him.
What are you doing here?
What do you mean, what am I doing here? Everybody didn't show up for the visit, so I said, if you don't come to me, I'm going to go to you.
Oh, you crazy man. Yeah. Well, look at you. You haven't been well. You shouldn't be traveling. Did you check with the doctor?
I checked with the doctor.
You checked with
him? Of course I checked with the doctor. Jeff home?
No, not yet. Let me find out when he's coming back. So everybody dropped out of the visit? I didn't realize. I had no idea.
Amy perches on the kitchen counter.
How did you get here? You didn't fly, did
No,
you?
Of course I didn't fly. I took a train to New York to see David, and he wasn't there, so I took a bus here.
You took a bus?
Yeah.
To Chicago?
All by myself.
Oh, my God. I can't believe it.
Jack got better fast.
Yeah, no, he did. Definitely. It was a 24-hour thing.
No. I like the house.
Yeah, but you've seen pictures.
I've seen pictures. I haven't seen the house. Not the real thing.
It's... Hey, everyone.
Hey, Jack.
How's it going?
Good.
Jack, why don't you take Grandpa outside and show him your golf?
You play golf?
Sure, I'm a natural.
Yeah, I'd like to see that.
You want to see that? Where are you hitting it?
That flag over there.
All the way out there? Oh, boy. Okay.
My record's 3.
3? I'll believe that when I see it. Come on, let's go.
You watch.
Okay.
Jack, standing at the top of the landscape garden, prepares to tee off.
Whoa.
The ball lands comfortably near to the flag.
Not bad.
Beat that.
Well, I'll beat that easily, but...
Frank takes the club.
Yeah.
Now I'll just have to show you a few things. Yeah, that was good, but not good enough. Frank the pro.
He gets into position.
Come on, Tiger Woods.
You ready?
Take your time.
Shh. Okay, ready? Yeah. Oh, shit. Sorry.
What was that?
That was just a practice shot. Give me another one.
I'm going after this.
Okay. There we go.
He hits a tree.
Oh, shit.
Whoa.
Christ. Sorry.
You hit the spice garden.
One more. Come on.
This is the last one. Come on. This is...
I'm your guest. One more. Let's go. No. Come on. One more. Let's go.
This is my last one.
One more.
Don't lose this one, too.
Give me another ball. Put it down. Be a sport.
I want to watch this thing fly.
Ready?
Impress me.
Ah, shit. Fucking Christ. Sorry.
Can you just... Yes, Chinese food would be fine. No, of course not. No one doesn't know anything.
So I hear you're doing very well at school.
Nah, not really.
What do you mean, not really? Your mother says you're at the top of your class.
Does she?
Yeah.
Frank and Jack are trying to find the balls.
You have to work hard at school.
Yeah, I know.
I'll tell you what I used to tell your mother when she was your age.
About being the best and getting to the top.
That's right.
Yeah, she warned me about that.
After dark, a car pulls up on the drive outside. Tall, dark-haired Jeff wearing a light brown suit catches the Chinese takeaway he's carrying on the wing mirror, and the contents spill out.
Jeff's home.
Okay.
Amy hurries down from the kitchen towards the open-plan living room.
Hey.
Hi, Jeff.
Hey. So this.
Jeff gives Frank an awkward hug.
Surprise.
Big surprise. Big surprise. Yeah. Look at you. You're looking so well.
You too.
It's good to see you.
Oh, my God. What a day. I don't want to know. Sorry I'm so late.
Can you believe this?
Can I believe it? Wow, nothing surprises me about this guy.
Later, they're all sitting at the dining table.
Wow, the place was really crowded today. I can't believe I was able to get out of there alive.
Don't just eat your rice. Make sure you eat your chicken. Okay.
Frank is contemplating the chopsticks in his hands with a puzzled frown. He snaps them apart. He eyes the two thin bits of wood, looking none the wiser.
Come and get your work. You don't know how to use chopsticks?
Yeah, I can use them. I can use them to beat you at golf. That's how well I can use them. You like making fun of me, don't you?
Yeah, you're funny.
Yeah, I'm funny, huh?
Try this.
Thanks. A fork. A regular fork. Now I can eat without dropping this all down my shirt.
Hmm? Can you pass Dad the chili sauce, please? Jack?
Jack moves the bottle of chili away from his dad.
No. Jack, pass him the sauce. I'm not passing it. Don't be silly.
I don't really want it. It's fine. I don't need it.
You sure? Stop asking him. He's not stupid. When he says no, he means no. If he changes his mind, he knows where it is. He can get it himself.
Frank takes another forkful of food, keeping his eyes firmly in front of him.
So what are your plans?
Well, I thought that I would stay a day or two or so, and then head on out to see Robert, surprise him on his tour.
Oh, that would have been so great. This week's really difficult. I feel awful. I got this huge pitch to oversee at the agency, and Jeff's flying out on business tomorrow. We should arrange it properly another time.
Well, maybe I can just spend time with Jack.
Yeah, that would have been great, too. But he starts school again tomorrow, and then he's off on a field trip for 3 days.
A field trip? Oh, where are you going?
I don't know. Nobody tells me anything anymore.
Well, you know, look, that's what happens when you show up unexpectedly. I understand. You're busy. That's fine. Look.
Oh, God, I feel awful. It's any other time but this week.
Listen, I've had a good time. I've seen the house. I've seen Jeff and you, and I let this guy beat me at golf. So all in all, it's been a pretty good trip.
I'm really sorry, Dad, really. Look, I'm going to call Robert tonight and find out where he's going to be at. He's really busy. He's on tour, and I just don't know if it's going to be possible. What?
Oh, no, don't call him, because I want to surprise him.
Oh, okay.
Promise?
Yeah, promise. Absolutely.
Jack, leaning on his hand, pokes at his food with his chopsticks. Clouds scud across a full moon. A telephone wire appears to bisect it.
I'm putting Dad on the train tomorrow. He'll be with you in Denver the next morning.
What? No, I'm rehearsing. I haven't got time to meet him.
Well, he can't stay here. I need to get on a flight to Mexico to see what's going on with David.
Is he okay? Have you spoken to him?
No, but I got through to the police today. No surprise. They said the arrest was drug-related, but they won't give me any more details over the phone, so I'm going to try and get on a flight tomorrow.
Amy, listen, I don't know if I can lie to Dad about David when he gets here.
Well, just make up an excuse to get him to Rosie's. Say you're flying off to Europe for a concert or something.
That's too obvious. I'm not going to do that.
Well, think of something yourself.
Are you okay?
The next morning, Frank takes a photo of himself with the house behind him. And on the drive, he stands over his upended case, leans forward, and pulls up the handle that he didn't know was there until Jack showed him.
Jeff, come on!
Amy and Jack come out of the house, eventually followed by Jeff, who's on his mobile.
Jeff, come on, Dad's waiting to take a photo!
Just get it. I'll look at it when I get there. All right, Mike, I'll take one of you two first. Okay. All right. Here. A little over this way. That.
Jack moves away from Jeff.
Little.
Frank indicates that they need to shuffle a bit to one side.
Together, everybody together. Together.
Then Jeff takes one of Frank, Amy, and Jack.
Where's the,
Just the silver button on top.
Oh, my God, this is film. This is great.
Watch your finger. Your finger's on it yet.
Just... Yep. Okay. Look at me. Beautiful. All right.
You said Jack was at the top of his class, but he says he's not doing that well.
No, he was at the top of his class. He's struggling at the moment, that's all. I tell you the good news and spare you the bad. Isn't that what Mom used to if you were kids?
It doesn't matter what your mother did. Tell me the bad news as well as the good news from now on. Do you understand?
Fine. You doing okay at home?
Huh?
You doing okay at home?
Fine.
You sure?
Yeah.
You sure?
I didn't realize there was so much to do around the house.
Mom would love to hear you say that.
What was all that at dinner last night with the chili sauce?
Jeff just doesn't let Jack get his own way all the time, that's all. They always fight. I checked the train times. There's one in a few hours. I just got to drop by the office first.
Advertising?
Advertising agency, yeah.
Your agency?
Part mine.
Frank smiles proudly. Amy drives them to downtown Chicago and then leads the way through a sleek, modern office complex towards a floor with the letters ICCG at the entrance. Frank, following her, points his camera.
Amy, wait. He left.
Okay.
One more, sorry.
Embarrassed by Frank holding people up, Amy forces a smile.
Got it.
You got it?
Yeah.
Frank admires a row of industry awards.
Yeah, no, it's a fish right there. It looks great. Okay. I think it works
perfectly. So, remind me of the market?
Yep. It's homeowners, blue-collar to middle-class.
Like my dad.
I guess, yeah.
Sure.
I guess,
just like your dad, sure.
So, pitch it to him. Let's see what he thinks. Hey, Dad, come over here.
Right now?
Yeah.
Well, sure. Hey, Tom.
Tom, hi. I'm Frank.
Frank. I'm Steph.
Steph?
Hi, Dad.
Hi, Frank.
Sorry. Dad, because we've got a TV commercial. They're going to pitch it to you. Okay? Sit down.
Sit here?
Yeah.
Okay. In your chair?
Yeah.
It's black leather.
Now you're in charge.
Oh, nice chair. Okay, so it's an ad for TV for a financial organization.
Yeah, don't tell him. Just pitch it.
I'm so sorry. Okay, so there's a guy by a lake, and he is fishing just like this.
Pine forests. Snow-covered mountains. Oh, and he's wearing a quilted jacket because, you know, it's like really cold.
What do you do when it gets cold? Put a quilted jacket on.
He's a little nippy. A
couple layers. Okay, here we go. Big fish jumps out of the water. I'm talking a big mother with big beady eyes. Kind of looks like...
Just like that.
Mm-hmm. Right? Looks at the guy right in the eyes and he says, hey, brother, you looking for me? Voiceover.
Ever wonder why life wasn't this easy? At Crest and Landing, transferring multiple loans to one company can be this easy.
Okay. We cut to a shot right here of this guy by a campfire. We see that big fish right above some coals, right close up of the fish. Boom, right there. As he says, hey, buddy, I'm done on this side. Want to turn me over?
Like it?
Yeah, it's funny. It's funny, the fish talking makes me laugh. Yeah, it's funny, it's very funny.
Fish usually don't talk, that's why it's...
Yeah. The fish with the face and the voice, and he looks like a fish. You look like a fish.
Oh, my God, I just said that to him yesterday. What did he look like? His mom looks like a flounder.
What was it for?
With the fish.
The spot, what was it selling?
Yeah, the loans, it's transferring the loans to another company. It's as easy as getting the fish out of the water.
Good. So does the client like it?
Likes it, but doesn't want to go with it.
Why not?
They feel uncomfortable about saying that it's easy to transfer your debt.
Because
it's not. It's actually a nightmare.
It's, like, really hard.
It's like an impossible dream.
It's like Sudoku.
Okay, but he's not paying us to advertise the fact that he has a perfectly average product. He's paying us to be economical with the truth. So tell him from me, he's got to go with the talking fish.
By the way, your daughter is really good at her job.
I know, that's the way she is.
And she has great hair.
Okay.
At the station, Frank checks the time against the station clock as Amy talks on the phone.
I know. Yeah, but you know what? It was fine. It really was fine. No.
She brings them some refreshments.
There's a line, sorry.
My watch is off by an hour. Should I change it?
You came from New York, so yeah, you need to go back an hour. It's central time.
She puts her bag on a chair.
You were laughing on the phone. It was nice to see you.
I was?
Yeah.
It was just work.
That was nice. Is it the fish?
The what?
The fish.
Oh, yeah, the client went with the fish. He said they should give it a name. I said we should call it Frank.
Because of me?
Of course, because of you.
No, not because of me. Really?
For real. Uh-huh.
Frank the Fish?
Frank the Fish.
No.
What?
Hi.
Hey.
Hey. You should be auditioning, yeah?
Dad, this is Tom, one of our creative directors. Tom, this is my dad, Frank.
Hi, sir. Nice to meet you.
Tom?
So, what are you up to?
I was supposed to be heading out of town to meet a client, but train got delayed.
Yeah, why don't you sit down?
No. I'll be interrupted.
No, it's fine. It's fine.
Really?
Yeah. Sit down.
Well, thank you.
Amy beams.
So, you live here or are you just visiting?
No, I'm just staying the one night.
At the gate, Frank hands Amy an envelope.
Here, this is for you.
What is it?
You'll see.
You'll tell me.
No, you'll see. You'll see. Yeah, I didn't want to send it in the mail. You'll see. Okay. You know what I'm trying to do? I'm trying to get us all around the same table.
Like we used to at Christmas.
You happy?
What do you mean?
You happy?
Yeah, of course I am.
Good. Good. Good girl. A happy one. First one on my list.
They hug each other. As he goes off, wheeling his suitcase, Amy turns away, her expression somber. Lines of telephone wires stretch across the sky like the lane dividers in a swimming pool. A round-faced woman with a pointed nose sits next to Frank on the train.
Isn't it terrible about Alice?
Alice?
The storm sweeping up the coast. My name is Alice, so I took an interest. It's Greek, I think, Alice.
The Greek?
Oh. It means truth.
Truth. Yeah, well, I heard about it. I was there a few days ago. I must have just missed it.
You're lucky then.
Yeah, well, I'm always lucky.
They smile at each other. More telephone conversations float across the wires as Frank sips from a glass of water in his motel room.
Amy, have you seen David?
No, not yet.
Why not?
Well, I had an appointment with a guy at the prison, but he didn't turn up. And I went to the embassy, found a lawyer, but he can't meet till the morning. I've just been running around. Hopefully tomorrow I'll start to get somewhere and we can tell Dad. Okay. I'll call you as soon as I know what's going on, but listen, don't worry, okay?
Back on the train, Frank is sitting on his own, gazing blankly out of the window at the rugged, arid terrain of flat-topped rocky outcrops passing by.
Did you hear my warning? This is the time of times, and your head feels like your body.
At his destination, Frank holds his camera above his head to take a picture. Then he looks through the viewfinder as he points it at a poster of the Pacific Northwest Symphony Orchestra. He poses next to the poster pointing at the orchestra.
One more, just...
More passers-by are held up while the picture's being taken. Frank wheels his case along the outside of the concert hall. Beneath the magnificent ornate ceiling of the columned concert chamber, a conductor addresses his orchestra.
Okay, everybody, it's a new day, an opportunity for all of us to make amends. So why don't we start at the beginning? Horns, trumpets, very percussive in the first section, strings, more energy in those bows. Ready?
Frank stands in the circular vestibule of the concert hall. A woman hurries up to him.
It's fine. I'll take you right through.
Thank you.
They're rehearsing right now.
He trundles his case up some steps and then comes into the back of the auditorium. Some of the musicians glance up at the sound of his case bumping on the steps. Frank wheels the case along the front row of seating on the balcony level towards the orchestra, eventually sitting down. His eyes move across the body of the orchestra, towards the back, where Robert is playing a drum. Frank waves at him. Robert puts down his drumstick and slips out of the rehearsal. He appears at a doorway above Frank and skitters down towards him. Frank beams at him, seeing him as a small boy in his mind's eye.
Dad, what are you doing here?
What am I doing? Come to see you conduct. What are you doing?
I'm rehearsing.
Oh, aren't you conducting?
Not today, no. I'm,
You're playing the drum.
I am. It's percussion. It's what I do.
Oh, I thought you were conducting.
Not today. I'll explain. I should get back.
You just walked off the stage and nobody noticed?
Come on, stop it. What are you doing here?
I'm not visiting. It's a surprise. I came to spend some time with my son, the conductor.
That's my cue.
Oh, get back. Get back.
As Robert hurries off, Frank tries to snap a picture of him, but he's too slow off the mark. He grins foolishly to himself. Later, Frank plays the timpani.
That's very good.
Very good, yeah. Never hit a drum in my life. Suddenly I'm very good. Without training, without skill, without all the musical talent that you have.
Never said I was conducting, Dad.
Yeah, well, your mother said you were doing well, that you were conducting and composing and doing your music.
I am doing my music. It's percussion. It suits me just fine.
But the drum?
It's low pressure, and I enjoy it. I get to travel, the money's fine, I got no ties.
Everybody said that you had a talent, you had a future.
People are polite, Dad, you know, they don't always tell you the truth. The truth is, I was never quite good enough.
But all that education, now you're disappointed?
I'm not disappointed, but you obviously are.
No, I'm not disappointed. It just seems like a waste, that's all.
Of what? What's it a waste of? Of your telephone wire?
No, it's not that. I didn't say that.
You know, I still compose and I conduct in my spare time, but nobody wants to employ me to do that professionally. That's just the way it is.
Well, I guess I'm just saying it's never too late. You could keep at it and go back to studying and I could help you out.
It doesn't work like that, Dad. If it was going to have happened, it would have happened by now. Besides, I'm not sure it's what I wanted. I think maybe I was doing it for you.
I don't believe that.
Dad, the point is, this suits me just fine. This is what I want.
Robert offers Frank half a sandwich.
Hey. You managing okay at home?
Yeah, I'm cooking every day.
Cooking? Yeah? Do you know what you're doing?
No, I just make it up. Well, I thought we could spend a couple of days together.
I fly to Europe this evening. It's a big trip. We got to pack up this afternoon. I wish I could, honestly, but, you know, I'm sorry, Dad. That would have been great.
Frank sits down in the row behind Robert.
I went to see David in New York. Was he still at the same address?
Yeah, I think so.
I want to check his address and phone number with you.
Sure.
They come out of the stage door, and Robert lights himself a cigarette.
Robert, come on, don't smoke.
What do you mean, don't smoke?
Don't smoke, you know better. Come on. Don't smoke.
All right. I won't smoke. Not in front of you, not if it upsets you, but, you know, I do smoke sometimes, just so you know. Anyway, you used to smoke.
I know I used to smoke. That's when I didn't know any better. Now I do. Your mother made me stop, too.
You know, I will, too, but occasionally I do smoke. When I want to quit, I'll quit.
Hey, Robert.
Hey, Dave. Let me get this straight. You worked in a wire factory, smoking a couple of packs a day. But me being a percussionist and having an occasional cigarette isn't good enough for you?
Come on.
You know, Mom used to say, make your dad proud. He worked so hard for us. And I know you're not proud of me. I know.
It's not true.
I can feel it. It's fine. I'm working hard here. I'm doing the best I can.
Have your cigarette.
What?
Have your cigarette. You need it.
Robert fishes in the pocket of his zip-up top.
Now, you know what? I quit.
Hi, Robert.
Hey, I just quit smoking.
Good job.
Thanks. I'm not quitting because you want me to. I'm quitting because I know you don't think I can. Just to make that clear, okay?
Okay. Anyway, you sounded good on the drums.
I missed a beat when I heard you coming in, bumping your bag. You kind of threw me off there.
Well, anyway, what's a missed beat here and there? It's good. It sounded very good.
Thanks.
Robert perches next to Frank.
We don't see each other very often. I wasn't trying to... No. I'm sorry, you know.
Look, you just gave up smoking. You're going to be a little edgy.
is that what it is? Well, anyway, I'm sorry.
No, I'm sorry, too.
Hey, James, I want to introduce you to my father. This is James Green, famous conductor. This is Frank, my dad, very famous dad.
Nice to meet you.
Nice meeting you. Good luck with everything.
Thanks.
Right, he's busy.
They walk to the entrance.
You got a girlfriend you want to tell me about?
There was someone up until recently.
Not anymore?
You know, she wanted to settle down. She started talking about babies. It's difficult with the traveling, you know. There's some girls in the orchestra.
I noticed.
Oh, yeah? You noticed, huh? I got my eye on a couple of them.
Couple, huh? Yeah. Well, look after yourself, Robert. I'm getting the whole family together. Amy's going to call you. But if not, if she forgets, you call her and you stay in touch with each other.
I will.
And you're happy?
Happy, yeah. I get paid to bang a big, loud drum all day. Of course I'm happy.
Frank tentatively holds out his hand. Robert hugs him.
Hey, I'm sorry that we couldn't spend more time together.
From the door of the concert hall, Frank looks back at Robert and sees him as a small boy again. The boy waves at him with a sweet smile. Frank nods to himself, lost in the memory. Then, with a muted smile, he waves and pushes open the door. Adult Robert watches him slip out into the sunshine, then turns on his heel and goes back towards the concert chamber. Frank has left Robert's letter on the kettle drum. At the bus station, Robert is on his mobile, unseen by Frank.
I don't know, I'm watching him right now, he's buying his ticket. He arrives in Vegas at 10 tomorrow morning, okay?
Okay, I'll be there.
No, he doesn't want you to meet him. He wants it to be a surprise.
Of course
okay?
I'm gonna meet him. If I want to meet him, I'll meet him.
Rosie, he doesn't... Okay, but, you know, he's not gonna like it.
How are you? Are you okay?
Yeah, I guess, I wanted to spend some time with him. I'm free tonight or tomorrow, but I just can't. I can't do it. I don't know what to say at home.
Oh, I know. God, I know.
Rosie.
What?
He's asking about David.
Okay. I won't say anything.
No, I mean, there's nothing to say. What are you going to say? We don't know anything.
The Greyhound bus speeds along the freeway, heading west into the sunset. On a green sward next to a busy road, Frank stands by a telegraph pole, festooned around the base by faded tributes to a young man, whose photograph is equally faded. In a public phone booth, Frank has dialed David's number. The letter Frank pushed under the door is where it landed. A block of light shines into the apartment from the window. The place is completely bare. Frank replaces the receiver. After dark, he sits on a bench at a deserted bus station.
Where you head? Where you head?
Las Vegas.
Not from here, you ain't. Not tonight. Let me see your ticket.
The bus driver puts down his bag and looks at Frank's ticket.
What time you got?
5 to 11. Well, the ticket office said that there was a bus going to Las Vegas, Bay 3, at 11 o'clock.
Well, now, all we know for sure is that your watch ain't being completely honest with you. There was a bus at 11, but now it's nearly 12. Where you just come from?
New York, Chicago, Denver.
Seems like you put your watch back one too many times, my friend. There ain't no way you're going to catch a bus that left you an hour ago.
There's no other bus.
There's no other bus. Not this time of night. There's a truck stop 100 yards up the road. If you're lucky, you might pick up a lift and catch the night train.
Okay, thank you.
A heavy truck speeds through the night. On the dashboard, there's a snapshot of a man and a woman.
Now, I'm wondering, why is this guy trying to see his whole family all over the country all on the same trip?
Well, I'm not dying, if that's what you're thinking.
Hey, I'm not thinking anything.
I'm just trying to visit the kids and surprise them. My mother's always kept an eye on them, and now it's up to me, so...
You lost your wife?
About 8 months ago.
I lost my husband. Just over a year now. Lost him to drink, but it was my fault. I was stupid. Ignored all the signs, you know how you do. I listened to that radio all day in this cab. We got ourselves an epidemic going on out there. You know, people eating too much, drinking too much, killing themselves, basically. Making up excuses all along the way. Because facing up to the truth ain't always easy.
Nope.
Yeah, and people like things easy. That's what they're used to.
Yeah.
Nobody likes to get hurt.
No. Nobody likes to get hurt.
I stop off in Reno. There's the night train from there. Gets you in Vegas in the morning. Otherwise, there's a cheap little motel where I shut down if you don't want to travel through the night.
Frank shoots the female driver a look.
Don't get all shy on me. That wasn't a proposition.
No, I'm blind. I
sleep in the truck, all right?
She pulls in alongside the railway station.
Take care, Frank.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Frank wheels his case into the station precinct and down a long, brightly lit pedestrian tunnel. He comes across a teenage boy sitting on the floor wrapped in a blanket.
You all right?
Don't touch me.
I'm not touching anybody.
Don't touch me.
You okay? Do your parents know where you are? If I give you some money, will you eat something?
Yeah, I'm clean, man.
Do you need some money?
I could use some money. Everyone can use some money, right?
Okay. Here you go. Here.
Frank hands the boy a note.
You're okay?
Yeah, what's with the question?
You could say thank you.
What?
You could say thank you. I gave you some money. Could say thank you.
Hey, you're right. I'm sorry, man. You're right. Yeah. I forgot my manners. You got a couple $100 in there, and this is my thanks.
The youth forces Frank against the tunnel wall. Frank pushes him back and shoves him to the ground. But his bottle of pills goes flying in the scuffle. The youth scrambles to his feet and hovers by the bottle.
You there?
Please don't do anything. Just, I need that's my medication. Now,
he stamps on the plastic bottle. He picks up his blanket and scarpers out of the tunnel.
Oh, God, no.
Frank bends down and retrieves the tablets that didn't get crushed. In a public phone booth, he dials a number. The signal travels along the telephone wires. He's dialed his own home phone. The photograph of Frank's wife Jean stands next to the phone.
I'm not here at the moment, and Frank is probably in the garden. Leave a message and I'll call you back.
Slowly, Frank's aggravated breathing subsides. The answering machine next to an 80s-style phone switches off as he replaces the receiver. Carefully, he brings his tablets out of his trouser pocket and counts them in the palm of his hand. Sitting in a near-empty train, he gulps them back with a sip of bottled water. The light from the locomotive pierces the darkness as Frank sleeps, his head resting on his folded-up jacket.
David? David?
Of all my children, you're the one that I worry about the most.
I'm trying, Dad.
Young David suddenly appears behind bars.
Dad!
David!
Tell me when I can see you.
David's disturbing painting flashes across Frank's dream as the train winds its way through the night until it's no bigger than a tiny orange dot. Beneath a pale blue Nevada sky, flat-topped Rocky Mountains line the horizon.
Robert, Dad wasn't on the bus.
What?
I'm at the 10 o'clock bus, like you said, and everyone else got off, but he's not on it.
Well, did you look in the station? I mean, where did
you look? Of course, I looked everywhere.
I don't know what to tell you. He was doing at 10 o'clock.
So how can he not be on it?
Downtown Las Vegas.
Are you all right, Frank?
Listen, the damnedest thing happened. I was brushing my teeth this morning, and I left my bottle of pills right on the edge of the sink. Well, I knocked the whole thing right into the sink, and it got all wet. There's nothing left.
Sink, gee, in the God sink. Damn it, you're as bad as me.
Damnedest thing.
Listen, I'll write a new prescription, all right? Just pop in. I'll leave it in the reception.
Is that the only way to get them? Go to reception? I have to come in. Oh, the garden is doing is great. I'm looking right at it. Looking really good. Really good.
Frank rides an escalator.
Hello.
Hey, it's me. Are you home?
No, I'm waiting for you. Where are you?
He told you I was coming, didn't he?
No.
I told him not to tell you I was coming, and he told you.
He spots Rosie across the street. Long fair hair, dark glasses, and a sleek figure. She turns and waves. For a moment, he sees her as a smiling little girl. Adult Rosie walks towards him with a broad smile.
Hi, Dad.
Hi, glamour girl.
Welcome to Vegas,
yeah,
Dad.
Thanks.
They drive along the strip past an Egyptian Sphinx. They're in a stretch limo with blacked-out windows.
I didn't order a stretch. I just wanted something comfortable.
Good, no, it's got plenty of leg room, that's for sure. That's why they call it a stretch.
I missed you.
Oh, I miss you.
I've been worried about you.
Tell me about your show.
Okay, we were at the Bellagio, uh-huh, and it was a big production. Lots of underwater dance scenes, and I was the mermaid, the lead.
Of course.
And you would have loved it.
When could I go?
It finished last week.
It finished?
Yeah. Next time you have to fly out and come see me. I didn't want to bother you this time because I knew that you weren't feeling well, but look at you.
Look at you. A dancer in a Las Vegas show on the big stage, just what you always wanted. Are you happy? Huh?
Very happy.
So the only thing missing now is anything?
A man, I know.
They glide past a replica of the Statue of Liberty. In a minimalist, ultra-modern building, they get into a lift.
This is where you live?
No, this is an elevator.
Very good.
I think you'll like the apartment. It's very spacious.
Well, I'm happy sleeping on a couch.
Really?
Really.
Okay.
Rosie leads him into an apartment with windows on all sides.
Wow.
You like it? Very me?
Very you. Very impressive.
He wheels his case into the center of the open-plan living room.
Well, do you want to see your room?
Sure.
Okay. Come on. So, bed or sofa? Sofa or bed?
This is my room.
Mm-hmm.
It's huge. Look at that television.
I know. Oh, I booked us dinner at a place called the Stratosphere. Do you know what that is?
No.
It's a revolving restaurant 800 feet above the ground.
Oh, stay just like that.
Okay.
She poses with her arms raised.
One more time.
I'll just get that. Stay there, I'll be right back.
I'm gonna take another picture.
He snaps the huge flat screen TV.
Julie, hi.
How are you?
Good, come on in.
I need you a favor. I have to go pick up Paul from the airport and I haven't got the car seat.
Okay, I want you to meet my dad.
Oh, great. Hi.
Hi.
Dad, this is my friend Julie.
Hi.
What?
I'm Jilly.
Hi, Jilly.
It's a pleasure to meet you. How you doing?
How are you doing? Who's this guy?
This is Max, and we could really use a favor. Could you watch him for a few hours?
Yeah, well, the only thing is that we were going to head out later for dinner.
Oh, you know, it's fine. You know, I'm going to pop downstairs. I can just see if Helen's around.
We could stay in if you want.
No, I think you guys should go out. It's your
dinner. You're tired. It's fine.
Whatever it is.
We'll take it. Here, give him to me.
You sure? Oh, thank you so much. Well, listen, I should be back in time for you guys to go out anyway. It'll just be a couple hours, but thank you again.
Frank sits with baby Max on his lap.
Okay, it's fine. Yeah, it's fine. I can bathe him. Okay, I'll call if I need anything. Honestly, I'll be all right. Okay, bye.
Frank is making faces at Max.
Slight problem.
Jilly?
Yeah, Paul's flight was canceled, so he's stuck in L.A. and she's going to pick him up. So that means we have Max for the night.
Okay.
Is that okay?
No, it's okay. What's the matter? What's the matter?
Rosie beams at her dad. Later in his smart bedroom, he turns his trouser pocket inside out and tips out the remaining fragments of his tablets, carefully removing the bits of fluff and dust that were also in the pocket. He brushes the bits of blue tablet into the palm of his hand and knocks them back with a sip of water.
Want me to get that?
No, Dad, just leave it. It's fine.
Okay.
Thanks.
Frank notices an answering machine.
Hi, I'm not here right now, so please leave me a message. It's me. Look, I need the apartment back sooner than I thought. So call me.
Frank, in a smart jacket, studies a photo of Rosie as a little girl standing with her smiling mother. The baby, meanwhile, is tucked up in an armchair, fast asleep, and Rosie's cooking spaghetti in the kitchen area. Frank strolls over to her.
A nice apartment.
Yeah, it's a little big, though.
You bought it?
No, I'm renting it, but I got a good deal.
Mm-hmm. Listen, I'm going to leave tomorrow. I'm going to go back home.
But you just got here.
I know, but it's been a long trip. I'm running low on my medication. I just thought I would...
Well, can't we get you a refill?
It's been a long trip, honey.
He fixes her with a look.
Yeah. You look tired.
I'm okay. I should get home. Would you be okay with that?
Yeah. Of course. You should do what you want. Here, take that.
She hands him a bottle of wine and brings their plates to the dining table.
I was thinking of flying.
You never fly.
I know.
Baby Max, lying on his back in the chair, moves his lips in his sleep as if he's tasting the wine that's being poured.
Thank you. Cheers.
Cheers.
They both sip their white wine.
You didn't really want to eat out, did you?
No, I didn't. Not 800 feet above the ground in a revolving restaurant.
Frank looks across at Rosie and sees her as a little girl eating spaghetti.
Remember when your mother taught you how to eat spaghetti?
Yep.
Adult Rosie has curled her spaghetti neatly around her fork.
Sometimes I pick up the phone to dial her number. And then I remember.
Keep calling next time. The number's still the same and I'm still on the other end.
Okay.
Yeah?
Yes.
I don't know what it is with you kids. You always told your mother everything. You never told me anything. You're always on the phone with her. I'd pick up the phone. I'd say hello. You'd say, hi, Dad. Mom there?
It wasn't that bad. It was just that Mom was easier to talk to, and you always worried so much if everything wasn't perfect.
No, that's not true.
We could just talk to Mom.
Oh, but you couldn't talk to me?
Well, she was a good listener. You were a good talker.
Well, so that's good. We made a good team.
Yeah.
You wouldn't change anything, would you?
You pushed us pretty hard.
No, that's not true. You didn't all feel that way, did you?
I think David felt it the most.
Yeah.
She lowers her dark eyes as she sips her wine. Frank takes a mouthful of food.
I can see that.
He so never wanted to lay down.
I was never any harder on him, as far as I could see. You were all different, and look at him today.
Rosie's expression darkens.
Did I tell you I went to see him in New York?
No.
Yeah, he wasn't there, but I saw some of his artwork downstairs in the gallery below his apartment. It was right there on display. It was just beautiful. So look what happened to him. He turned out okay. You turned out okay.
I don't know, Dad.
How can you say that? Look at you. You wanted to be a dancer ever since you were a little girl. You were gifted. Nobody pushed you.
What about your
parents? It all worked out.
What did you want to be when you were my age?
I didn't have any plans. I just wanted to hold down a job and find somebody crazy enough to marry me, your mother. But when you guys came along, things were different. There were opportunities. What kind of father would I have been if I hadn't pushed you? Huh?
So there wasn't anything you wanted to achieve?
No, I didn't really think much about it. Never really gave it much thought. All I want to do is just be a good father, that's all.
Rosie takes another mouthful. A neon light strobes outside the plate glass window behind them. Next morning, at the airport.
So you've got your boarding pass, and you're all checked in, and we know your gate, so... I'll come visit you as soon as I can, I promise.
I'd like that. I want to get us all around the same table together.
At Christmas.
Or before, it's up to you.
Great. Count me in.
Oh. Yeah. He hands her the last letter.
What's this?
I had to give it to each of you.
Well, shall I open it?
I'll open it later.
Are you sure?
Sure, I'm sure.
Okay.
Okay. Go ahead.
Just for you.
He kisses her on the cheek and hugs her tightly.
I will.
They stand facing each other, his left hand holding her right hand, both of them smiling.
Bye, Dad.
He waves at her without turning round as he walks off towards security. Retrieving his ticket from an airport official, he glances back and gives Rosie another wave. She watches him with a warm smile, which slowly fades, and her limpid round eyes cloud over as she turns to go. Later, she's on duty in a seafood bar. Frank's plane takes off.
Rosie, where's Dad? He's on his way home. I just left him. What did you find out? David was caught buying some drugs in a bar.
No.
He got sick so quickly that they now think he may have panicked and swallowed some of the drugs when he was arrested.
Is he okay? Have you seen him?
Not yet. He was taken to a hospital. I'm there now, but they're not being very helpful.
What do you mean?
I keep asking if he's here, but I can't get a straight answer. Listen, the lawyer's with me, and the guy from the embassy's here. I need you to call Robert. I promise I'd call him before his concert, tell him what's going on. Can you do that for me? Yeah.
Robert in white tie and black tux is standing by his drum looking mournful. On the plane, Frank, looking agitated, peers out of the window at a flash of lightning amid the thick clouds outside. He glances behind him and addresses a flight attendant.
Excuse me. How much longer before we land?
40 minutes.
40
but there's a storm, so it might take a little longer.
A storm?
It's okay. We go around it, not through it.
Can I have some more water, please?
Sure.
He gets out of his seat and hurries to the restroom. He runs the tap and wipes his mouth.
Ladies and gentlemen,
the flight attendant has placed a glass of water next to his seat. Inside the restroom, he struggles to dry his face, his hand pressed against his chest. He can hardly breathe. The flight attendant comes down the aisle, checking people's seat belts. She tries the handle of the restroom. Frank grimaces with fear and pain. Water spills out of the plastic beaker as the plane shudders. The flight attendant forces open the door, and as if in a dream, bends down to him. The picture whitens out to Frank at his present age in his garden with David, Rosie, Robert, and Amy as children.
Come on, it's ready. Everybody sit down. Hey, David, come on.
Thank you. How come you're home, Dad?
I took the day off work.
But you never do that.
I know, but I wanted to spend some time with you guys.
Is anything wrong?
No, nothing is wrong. Well, you know, actually, there is something. You know, I've been asking myself a question. It's been like a puzzle, and I can't figure it out. Let's stop eating for a minute.
The four children put down their knives and forks.
I keep asking myself why you all lied to me. All of you. Amy, Jeff wore the same shirt to work the morning after I stayed. He doesn't live with you anymore, does he?
He left home about 3 months ago. There's another woman. That's why Jack hates him.
When that man Tom came over to me at the station and shook my hand, you wanted to make an impression, didn't he? You pulled a chair up before he came over because you were expecting him.
Tom was waiting at the station. I wanted to know that you'd met him. I didn't want to miss the opportunity.
In case I get sick and we never get the chance to meet?
Young Amy nods at Frank. They all look up at the brewing storm.
Robert.
I think we should go in. I think I've had some rain.
There were posters all over the city. You weren't going to Europe. You weren't even performing that night. We could have spent time together. But you lied to me. You didn't want to be with me.
The truth is, Dad, there are lots of things that we don't tell you. But that doesn't mean that we want to hurt you. Mom didn't always tell you everything you need.
Don't blame your mother for this. Wipe your mouth. Rosie, the baby is yours, isn't it?
I was going to tell you. Go on. Tell the rest.
Robert, shut up.
Go on. I'll tell her.
Shut up.
She doesn't know if she likes boys or girls.
Robert, stop it.
Did your mother know you were pregnant?
Young Rosie nods.
And she kept it from you. Why would she do that?
We were going to tell you. But then Mom got sick. I didn't want to disappoint you.
David, do you still live in New York at that apartment?
No.
Then where can I find you?
I can't tell you.
Tell me where I can find you, when I can see you.
I don't want to see you.
Do not laugh at me. Tell me the truth. Wipe that smirk off your face. Wipe the smirk off your face. I have your skateboard right in the shed over there. I know exactly where it is. I'll burn the damn thing. You hear me? Don't laugh. Don't laugh. Quiet. After everything I've done for you, this is all you can do is laugh? When I'm asking you about something that's worrying me? Jesus. David, your mother always asked me why I was so hard on you. This is why. This is exactly why. Have some respect.
Young David defiantly holds his gaze. Frank blinks unhappily at his four children.
So what am I supposed to do?
Act as though nothing's wrong. That's what Mom did. It's best for all of us.
I can't do that. I can't act as if nothing happened. What do I tell your mother? What do I say?
Anyway, she won't ask her anything because she's dead.
David!
A huge black cloud fills the sky above them, and it starts to rain.
That's it. I've had enough. I'm out of here. I'm out of here.
The children pick up their plates and run inside. Rosie's the last.
How can I do that?
If you love her, like she loves you, then you tell her what she wants to hear. Tell her that we are all fine.
Frank stays seated at the table, getting soaked in the downpour. he raises his eyes to the heavens. On the tarmac in pouring rain, he's stretchered to an ambulance by three paramedics, an oxygen mask over his mouth. Inside the air terminal in the baggage hall, his unclaimed case rides the empty carousel. On a grey, windy day, Amy sits at the foot of Frank's bed at the hospital, her face pale and drawn. With the top of the bed slightly raised, Frank lies back, his head pressed against the pillow, his face white. As he stirs, Amy stands up and leans over him. She hurries out of the room. His hooded eyes open slightly. Amy, now smiling warmly, has returned with Rosie and Robert.
At last, finally have my family in the same room. Is Taylor here?
Rosie's here, and Robert.
How you feeling?
Was it a heart attack?
I'm not sure.
Amy, is he telling the truth?
The doctor's waiting for some test results.
Oh, come on. Don't lie to me. Well, I was... But it's so hard to believe all you know. Come on.
They suspected a heart attack. They ran some tests, and they got the results. And it was a heart attack. A mild one.
Good, a start at least.
I didn't want to worry you until you had a chance to come to terms with what happened.
You can worry me, all of you. I'm a father of four. I expect that. I know you all had problems. I know that. And I can see you've been keeping things from me. But right now, there's something that I...
Dad, maybe you should rest.
No, I will rest, but I need an answer to a question. You were honest with your mother, and I want you to be honest with me. It's all right. I'm okay. I can handle it. I know David is in trouble. And I just want to know where he is and how soon I can see him. So who's going to tell me?
I need to take a bunch of rest for a while.
What is it? Just tell me the truth.
Dad, I'm sorry. David died, Dad. I'm sorry.
No, that's not true. Tell me that's not true.
I'm sorry, Dad.
No. He moved out of his apartment, and we knew that he was traveling, and then we started getting calls from Mexico.
There's a lot of confusion. We didn't want to tell you until we were sure.
He
had a lot of problems. He wasn't happy, Dad. He's been having a tough time since Mom died. We've all been worried about him.
Yeah, but not for sure. It was Mexico. It could be anyone. It could be a mistake. It could be.
I flew out there after you visited.
Huh?
I flew out there after you visited. That's why you couldn't stay. That's why we all made excuses.
No. Not my son. That's not my son. No.
They said it was an overdose.
No, but my son. That's not my son. No.
flashes the exterior of the hospital. Frank is lying on his back in the hospital bed. The door of his room is open, letting in a rectangle of bright light from the corridor outside. The curtains flutter in the faint draft coming in from the window. Frank remembers his conversation with David.
Not a painter. Painters paint walls and dogs pee on walls. You're going to be an artist. You're going to work hard?
Yes, Dad.
You're going to make me proud?
Brown-haired, fine-featured young David, standing by Frank's bedside, lowers his eyes.
Sorry about how everything's worked out, Dad.
It's not your fault.
David moves around to the foot of the bed.
I've been thinking about what I want to do when I grow up.
Yeah, but what did you decide?
I might still be an artist, or I might just do a normal job, like a painter.
I'd be proud of you no matter what you did.
Really?
Really.
Good. I told Mom I wouldn't be long.
Give him my love.
I will. I'll see you, Dad.
David.
Hmm?
I'm sorry.
Adult David, wearing a hoodie, looks back at Frank from the door.
That's not your fault, Dad.
Frank turns his head towards the door, but there's nobody there.
David?
David?
The brightly lit hospital corridor is empty. Outside, the storm rages on. Back at home, Frank sips some coffee at his breakfast table. He puts on his reading specs and picks up a large brown padded jiffy bag, addressed to David Good. He turns it over and opens it up. He pulls out the contents, puts the envelope to one side, and starts to sift through the pile of David's unopened mail. He finds the letter that he'd slipped under David's door. He turns it over and opens it. On a small piece of paper, he'd written, "David, see you at Christmas. Love, Dad." Under it, he'd put in a copy of a photo of Jean and their four kids when they were very small, sitting in front of the Christmas tree with their presents. He gazes at it for a long moment, then slips it back into the envelope. Taking off his specs, he holds the envelope in his hands, his impassive face not giving anything away. He gets to his feet and wanders over to a bookcase, where he takes the photo out of the envelope and props it up between a photo of Jean and one of himself with David as an adult. He gazes at the picture for another long moment, then turns away and walks to his bedroom. On another day, he's standing in front of Jean's headstone.
Well, it was a big trip. And if you ask me what I'd learn, I'd have to tell you I'm not sure. I know if I could do it all over again, I would ask less of the kids. As long as they were happy, that would be fine with me. I know I have to stop thinking of them as if they're still children. I can't tell them what to do anymore. They have to find their own way. And sometimes you talk to me about things that I should have listened to you more carefully. You presented me with the details I
our children's lives, and I ignored them. And for that, but that isn't what you want to hear, I know. What you want is the news. Well, the news is this.
Robert, Amy, and Rosie promised to visit me for the holidays, and you know what? This time I believe them. David, I hope we'll spend Christmas with you.
The Art Gallery in New York.
I went back to New York to buy David's painting.
Frank talks to a young woman in the gallery.
The portrait, I know which one you mean, but I'm afraid it's sold.
It is sold. No.
Were you familiar with the artist?
Or? Yeah, not as much as I would like to have been, but yeah. Thank you.
Why don't you give me your details? If anything with David's comes in, I'll let you know. I just saw your name. I'm stupid. I should have realized.
That's okay.
I'm sorry. You know, I knew David. He used to hang out at the gallery all the time. And he used to say that if it wasn't for his dad, that he never would have become an artist. He said he would have ended up painting walls and that dogs pee on walls. Look, we might have something of his in storage. I can check if you'd like.
Okay, sure.
I won't pretend David's work was very commercial. Here it is. He had his own style, and he wasn't concerned with fashion.
She unwraps a canvas.
But for what it's worth, I thought he was really special.
Frank's hard face softens as he contemplates a simple drawing in black and white of tangled telephone wires dangling between three telegraph poles receding into the distance. He cracks a thin smile and his eyes well with pride.
Thank you.
A line of real telegraph poles recede into the distance towards a range of snow-capped mountains.
Hello, this is Frank. I'm not here at the moment. I'm probably out shopping for the holidays, but if you leave a message, I will call you back. Thank you.
He's at the local supermarket.
Don't laugh, but I promised to cook the turkey for the first time this year.
Got the whole family coming. What's the biggest bird you got?
Half dozen of them. And treat the children to some expensive wine.
Yes, okay. Red's on the right.
Excellent choice. I say so, sir.
It's a sale price.
It's a sale price?
Yeah. I'm even thinking of replacing the old tree.
If I gave it to you for any cheaper, I wouldn't be making any money.
Let me tighten it. If you're letting it droop too much.
I need a little more slack to get around. How does this look? No.
That side's perfect.
Are you kidding me?
Yours needs work.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Thanks. What's that sound?
Frank, putting up Christmas lights with Robert, reaches for his cooking timer.
Turkey.
You're timing the turkey?
Yep.
That's so efficient.
Rosie throws a snowball.
Hey, Jesus!
Oh!
Oh, now you...
And another one.
Oh.
It's not cooked yet, Dad. I just checked it.
You just checked it?
Yeah, the juices are still red.
Well, why don't you stick to the potatoes and I'll do the turkey.
Okay.
Amy smiles to herself. In the living room, Jilly finds an ornamental angel.
Oh, this is you. Look, it has your name in the third grade written on its butt.
I remember when I made this. Yeah.
Frank comes past with his timer.
Hey, Dad, are you okay?
Yeah.
Check that turkey, Grandpa.
Frank brings the turkey out of the oven.
Yeah, that's a big bird. You better cook it properly.
Don't worry.
Check the leg, Dad, just to make sure.
Well, Mom actually would have cooked it for at least another 30 minutes.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's something I need to tell all of you about your mother. As much as I loved her and as good a cook as she was, in all the 41 years we've been married, she always overcooked the turkey. Every single year. I just never had the heart to tell her. All right. Perfect.
Robert, wearing a Santa hat, puts a lit candle in front of a photo of David and one of their mother. Rosie brings Max to the table. Robert pours red wine. Frank, looking smart in his jacket, stands over the turkey. As Amy brings in vegetables, Frank sits down with a contented look.
There we go.
Your family is making its way in the world, and you can be proud of the children and their achievements. And if you were to ask me, I would have to say, in all honesty, everybody's fine. Everybody's fine.
With Frank at the head of the table, he has Rosie on his right, baby Max in his high chair, and Jilly next to him. On the other side, he has Robert, Jack, Tom, and Amy. As the meal progresses, Jilly and Rosie take turns to feed Max, and Amy strokes Tom's arm.
For so long, I was out in the cold, and I taught myself to believe every story I told.
Fairy lights twinkle on the outside of the house and on a tree on the front lawn.
But it's been too long.
From above, telephone wires crisscross the scene as the winter sun sets on the horizon.
Came so close.
The picture fades to black as the credits roll. The photos that Frank took on his trip appear on the left-hand side of the screen. He, Amy and Jack. Amy on the stairs to her office.
It was fun.
Frank pointing to the Pacific Northwest Symphony Orchestra poster. Rosie and her baby. The huge flat TV screen. The female truck driver giving him a friendly wave from her cab. A Greyhound bus. Another one of baby Max. And a picture of himself taken outside Amy's house.